Is everybody in? Is everybody in? Is everybody in? The ceremony is about to begin.
Hard-hitting news. Alternative talk radio. Get ready, America, for Deadline Live with your host, Jack Blood. Deadline Live is a daily wrap-up for those too busy in the daily grind to discern and dissect the news. While the so-called mainstream media buries the truth, Jack Blood uncovers it, exposing the lies that our trusted government officials do not want us to know. And now, please welcome Jack Blood.
Exposing the lies that your trusted government officials do not want you to know about, exposing the disinformation and the war propaganda that your establishment media constantly contorts to have you do their bidding. Hi-ho! Welcome to another live original edition of Deadline Live this 12th day of April, 2007. I'm Daffodil 11, your radio gun, your tour guide, reporting for the next 2 hours. Hi-ho. Yes, if you've noticed, we interjected a few hi-hos and a Daffodil 11 there in our intro. And yes, Kurt Vonnegut has died, and I know Alex Jones was talking about it on his radio program today, and I'm really glad he did. I am another person who was heavily influenced by the writings of Kurt Vonnegut. So if you will bear with me, We'll talk about this here in the first half hour of the program. Colonel Dr. Bob Bowman, who's running again for Congress and is touring across the country, will be speaking here over the weekend. We'll talk about that. Is scheduled to join us sometime during the program today. Also, Chris Emery, who I consider really the foremost expert, one of the top experts in the world about the Oklahoma City bombings. Of course, the anniversary coming next week. He'll also be speaking here over the weekend at a giant conference at UT here in Austin, Texas. But Chris will be joining us in the second hour as well. I know that will make a lot of the listeners in Oklahoma very happy. So we have an action-packed program for you today and a lot of news to report as well. I want to talk about Kurt Vonnegut. Unfortunately, we lost Kurt yesterday. Kurt had a bad fall. This was not reported at the time, to my knowledge. Had suffered some brain injuries falling in his Manhattan home, and has passed away at the age of 84 years old. And I, you know, as a young writer, I have to tell you what an influence Kurt Vonnegut was to me. As a reader, Kurt Vonnegut was a huge influence to me, and I'll say that I really found my interest in fiction and literature because of people like Kurt Vonnegut as a very young person, and then that led me on a long path of voracious reading as a bibliophile. And I have, because of people like Vonnegut, because they really got me interested in reading, people like Steinbeck and others, I ended up reading some of the greatest masterpieces of our time, and I think it had just a huge effect on my life. Kurt was extremely easy to read, prolific, and embedded in his stories were real life points, real life commentary, which of course we see really in vogue today. Hopefully it will become more in vogue, but we really lost a great, great person in Kurt Vonnegut. Throughout his 14 novels, countless short stories and essays, and a handful of plays, he employed a unique, lively writing style, but will be remembered most for the man whose words resonated with the disillusioned 60s and 70s counterculture. Tom Wolfe said there was never a kinder and at the same time wittier writer to be with personality, so said Tom Wolfe. He's just a gem in that respect. And as a writer, I guess he's the closest thing we've had to a Voltaire. He could be extremely funny, but there was a vein of iron always underneath it, which made him quite remarkable. He was just never funny to be funny. He just was funny. Gore Vidal, who also noted that Vonnegut and Norman Mailer were among the last writers around who had served in World War II, said Vonnegut was a sort like nobody else. He was imaginative. Our generation of writers didn't go in for imagination very much, said Vidal. Literary realism was the general style. Those of us who came out of the war in the 1940s made it sort of an official American prose, and it was often a bit on the dull side. Kurt was never dull. And one of the things I'll never forget that Kurt Vonnegut said was making an excuse, I think, for an interview that he had done, and he was being interviewed. We're going to actually play an interview of his in the next segment, which I think you'll find very enlightening. But he was being interviewed, and, you know, he was having trouble searching for words, and I think, you know, he put this down as a joke, but it does have some ring of truth to it, and that writers write because they're just not the best talkers. Now, that certainly wouldn't be the case with somebody like Oscar Wilde and so many great writers who could spin a story and can gather people around and tell great stories. But I thought that really just shows how humble Kurt Vonnegut Jr. was. He just didn't think he was a very good talker, and he often used self-deprecating humor in the sense that, look, I've got to spend hours and hours and hours to put together a page. And, writing is a really, really hard thing to do, and I've, written a lot of things in my life, from poetry to philosophy to literature to political commentary. And I'll tell you, as a talker, people like myself, we talk because we can't write. Because, you know, if I wanted to, compete with, I guess if that's the term, or if I wanted to be as relevant as somebody like Kurt Vonnegut Jr., I would have such a long way to go that it would almost be impossible. And I guess in some ways, the reason I quit writing fiction is because of people like Vonnegut. You just can't get that far. It isn't that easy, and he makes it look so easy, and that was the great thing about Kurt Vonnegut. But Kurt Vonnegut was also somebody who, you know, really had his finger on the pulse of culture and politics with his columns for In These Times. Again, a blistering attack on the administration of President George W. Bush in the Iraq War. By saying that our leaders are power-drunk chimpanzees, I'm in the danger of wrecking the morale of our soldiers fighting and dying in the Middle East, he wrote. Their morale, like so many bodies, is already shot to pieces. They are being treated, as I never was, like toys that a rich kid got for Christmas in December. In A Man Without a Country, he wrote that George W. Bush has gathered around him upper-crust C students who know no history or geography. Unquote. He did not regard the 2004 election with much optimism. In fact, later on, in a famous speech, one of his last speeches, he said it was stolen, as the 2000 election was stolen. He did not regard the 2004 election with much optimism. Speaking of Bush and John Kerry, he said that no matter which one wins, we will have a skull and bones president at a time when the entire vertebrae species, because of how we have poisoned the topsoil, the waters, and the atmosphere, are becoming, hey, presto, nothing but skull and bones. In 2005, Vonnegut was interviewed by David Nelson of The Australian. During the course of the interview, Vonnegut was asked his opinion on modern terrorists, to which he replied, I regard them as very brave people. Again, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. When pressed further, Vonnegut also said that they, the suicide bombers, are dying for their own self-respect. It's a terrible thing to deprive someone of their self-respect. It's like your culture is nothing, your race is nothing, you're nothing. It is sweet and noble, sweet and honorable, I guess it is, to die for what you believe in. Now, this last statement is a reference to the line, Dulce et decorum est pro patria mori. Translated from Latin, it is sweet and appropriate to die for your country. That's from Horace's Otis, and possibly from Wilfred Owen's ironic use of the line in Dulce et decorum est. David Nelson took offense to Vonnegut's comments. This was the reporter again interviewing him for the Australian newspaper. He took offense to Vonnegut's comments and characterized him as an old man who doesn't want to live anymore, and because he can't find anything worthwhile to keep him alive, he finds defending terrorists somehow amusing. Well, Vonnegut's son, Dr. Mark Vonnegut, responded to the article by writing an editorial in the Boston Globe in which he explained the reasons behind his father's provocative posturing, quote-unquote, and stated that if these commentators can so badly misunderstand and underestimate an utterly unguarded English-speaking 83-year-old man with extensive public record of exactly what he thinks, maybe we should not worry, or we should worry, about how well they understand an enemy that they can't even figure out what to call. Touche! Hi-ho! We'll come right back and play this clip by Kurt. It's great.
I believe what I said yesterday. I don't know what I said, but I know what I think. And I assume it's what I said.
Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
Dr. Bob Bowman joining us here in about 10 minutes on the program, just lamenting, eulogizing somebody I never knew, someone I never spoke to, I had no connections to the guy, but he's just been such a huge inspiration for me. I think a lot of the weird sense of humor I get is from reading a lot of Kurt Vonnegut or some of the other writers who have helped shape, my personality, let's call it. In a 2006 interview with Rolling Stone, the magazine stated, "It's not surprising that he, Kurt Vonnegut, disdains everything about the Iraq War. The very notion that more than 2,500 U.S. soldiers have been killed in what he sees as an unnecessary conflict makes him groan." He says, quote, "Honestly, I wish Nixon were president," Vonnegut laments. "Bush is so ignorant." And that's really saying a lot. If you want to check out some good reading, and I'm not going to have time to go over this today, check out Kurt Vonnegut's Stardust Memory. This was his speech at Ohio State campus. It was his last speech, his last paid speech, as he says. This is the one where if you want to know what he thinks, he'll tell you. He says, "I just want to say that George W. Bush is the syphilis president." And he goes on to say, "The only difference between Bush and Hitler is that Hitler was elected." And you all know, of course, that the election was stolen right here in Ohio, which he said just after the 2004 election was stolen. I got to play this, though. I think this really kind of speaks to who Kurt Vonnegut was. It is part of an interview and part of a collage put together as he was promoting his book, Cat's Cradle. Of course, most of you have heard of that and have read it. If you haven't, it's in one of his most interesting books. And talks about the technology of the world, the technology that DARPA and the Manhattan Project and have created, and scientists' complete detachment from what happens to the very technology they create. I think something that has really been driven home over the years. So I'd like to play that now. I think that gives you some insight into the character of this great man that we lost yesterday here, Kurt Vonnegut Jr.
Cat's Cradle is a science fiction novel, and the great whiz-bang science fiction device in the middle of it is a form of frozen water which is stable at room temperature. And if this sort of substance ever got loose on the Earth, it would teach all water how to freeze in that way, and the water on the face of the Earth would vanish. This novel, too, was inspired by General Electric, by science at General Electric. In those days, it was quite conventional for research scientists to be indifferent about what became of their discoveries, as they were interested only in truth. And I think that the government was very interested in having our scientists feel that they were in no way associated with weapons, and so they would continue to conduct research cheerfully. I worked there as a publicity man with Irving Langmuir, who was a Nobel Prize winning physicist. He was the only one in private industry in those days. And he was maddeningly absent-minded, and it seemed wrong to me in view of some of his discoveries that he should be so indifferent to what became of them. So this dreadful substance, which is discovered by a man who is purely interested in truth, finally winds up in the hands of a dictator. And not to leave you in suspense, the world ends. I opened my eyes, and all the sea was iced iron. The earth was locked up tight. It was winter, now and forever. Hello, hello, I called through the palace ruins. The awesome winds had torn canyons through the great stone pile. The arch of the palace gate was the only man-made form untouched. Written at its base was a calypso. Someday, someday, this crazy world will have to end, and our God will take things back that he to us did lend. And if on that sad day you want to scold our God, why, go right ahead and scold him. He'll just smile and nod. I was born in 1922, and then I had a father and a brother who believed strongly in technology, that the world was going to be remade. And I was an enthusiast for this, too, and I wrote one time that I expected that by the time I was 30, that Popular Mechanics magazine would have a color photograph of God on its cover. Science would have cornered God and got him to agree to pose and to answer any questions they might still have. And I was a great believer in truth, scientific truth, and then, as I wrote once, then truth was dropped on Hiroshima. And So I was hideously disillusioned, as that is when I lost my innocence, really, is when the bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, and I was with my scientist brother when the news came, is when we picked up the newspaper. I had come home from the war in Europe and was at home on a furlough, and here the newspaper told about the atom bomb. And my brother knew exactly what this thing was, and that this was not just anything like gunpowder or dynamite or TNT, that this was a new order of destruction. And, people now, as ordinary citizens, only now are realizing how destructive these weapons are, and that they are, in fact, a new order of violence. I am embarrassed. We are all embarrassed. We Americans have guided our destiny so clumsily, with all the world watching, that we must now protect ourselves against our own government and our own industries. We have discovered a brand new method for committing suicide. What is the method? To say nothing and do nothing about what some of our businessmen and military men are doing with the most unstable substances and the most persistent poisons to be found anywhere in the universe.
I'm going to save some of that. We might go ahead, and there's about another 2 minutes left on this clip, and I might play that after we get done with Dr. Bob Bowman. But that was a little verbiage from his anthology, his compendium, Palm Sunday, which is extremely readable, that we now find ourselves having to oppose government and industry, and that there's a new method for committing suicide, saying nothing and doing nothing. And as far as Kurt Vonnegut Jr. is concerned, he is certainly not guilty of that suicidal crime, for he constantly cried to the heavens, to anyone who would listen, about exactly what was going on. He also revered one of my favorite authors ever, and that is Salim. We'll come right back with Dr. Bob Bowman right after this.
Bad
Deadline Live. I am Jack Blood, your radio gun. This is the GCN Radio Network. Dr. Bob Bowman is a lieutenant colonel, was a lieutenant colonel in the United States Air Force. He flew over 101 combat missions in Vietnam, and he later directed all the Star Wars programs under Presidents Ford and Carter, that is, when their existence was secret. He holds a PhD in aeronautics and nuclear engineering from Caltech. He's chaired several major international conferences. He's given thousands of lectures on national security, has taught at several colleges and universities. He almost, very, very close race, almost won the race against the incumbent in his home county in Florida for Congress, United States Congress. He is a well-spoken and a very intelligent 9/11 truther. I don't think he would mind if I called you that. He's rerunning again for Congress here in the next year or two, and he'll be speaking here in Austin, Texas, we're very honored to say, at the conference by the Project for New American Citizen, Rebuilding America's Senses, Exposing False Flag Terrorism to Prevent a New 9/11. And Bob Bowman will be speaking at 3 to 4 p.m. tomorrow, sorry, Saturday, at the University of Texas Room Burdine 106. That is a two-day conference. I am emceeing the conference. I'll be introducing Bob once again. Bob, we've worked together all over the country. You just can't seem to get rid of me. You probably think I'm a stalker now.
Oh, that's right. That's right. But it's always good.
What a great conference. Stephen Jones, Professor Stephen Jones, Alex Jones will be speaking. You'll be speaking. Webster Tarpley will be speaking. Chris Emery, who's going to be on the program here in the second hour, will be speaking. I'll be speaking. I know Gary Franchi is coming down from Chicago for this, a big GCN host. And Daniel Abramson will also be speaking and delivering a lecture. This is probably one of the biggest conferences we've had down here, Bob. I'm glad you're part of it.
Well, I am too.
Can I, you know, we were just kind of eulogizing and lamenting Kurt Vonnegut Jr., who was just a great writer and wrote and spoke quite a bit on technology. His book, Cat's Cradle, was all about what happens when technology goes bad. And you were in the Air Force, and I'm reading a recent report. I'd like to get your opinion on this, Bob. Air Force report, bring back chemical weapons. And a recent study out of the Air Force War College calls for using chemicals as a first-use weapons against the terrorists, part of a larger pitch to rethink the long-term pariah of military warfare. And it goes on to explain non-lethal chemical agents. What would be your opinion on something like that? I mean, we finally, you know, gotten to a place, hopefully, where we have eradicated some of these diabolical weapons, and here's the Air Force College, War College, out saying we need to reinstitute chemical weapons because we have all these terrorists and insurgents to fight.
Yeah, well, that's a shame. You know, all sorts of stuff comes out of the think tanks, and the Air War College certainly is one. I taught there many years ago, 1974, I guess. I don't think it means a whole lot, and I don't think that a decision to reintroduce chemical weapons will be made. Certainly, well, you know, you have no idea what you might expect out of this administration.
That's right.
But fortunately, we're going to get rid of them very soon, and I don't think any other administration would do such a thing.
Yeah, I'd like to agree with you, Bob, but I've seen administration after administration do just the most horrible things, as have you, so I don't put anything past them. But, you know, you're somebody, as you mentioned, who taught at the Air Force War College. You've certainly earned your stripes through experience and through your lectures. I would assume that you were advising them not to do this then.
I would indeed.
I mean, doesn't that really, that does not bode well for winning hearts and minds, does it, if we're going to be using these chemical agents on our so-called enemies, which many times includes, you know, little children?
That's right, and it opens a Pandora's box for use of all of this stuff against us as well.
What do you think, and I wanted to ask you about this, Bob, and then we'll talk a little bit about the lecture that you have. I know you're on a cell phone somewhere near Houston. In fact, you'll be speaking in Houston tonight?
That's correct.
We'll give out that information as well, if you can bear with us. I've got to get you on the record on this as well, Bob. And that is, you know, the reinstituting of Star Wars and the furor it's causing in Europe. Many people accusing the United States of being able to take over Europe with the shield of obviously Putin, and now Gorbachev coming on the record extremely, you know, malevolent about this particular science. Can you tell us, is the science real? We've heard a lot about this. You're the one that worked at two administrations at the top of the pyramid on this. Is this viable, and what is it as a political weapon? How can it work? I mean, are we going to have a war over this? I mean, what does this really mean, if you can break it down for us?
Well, let me put it real simply. I'll jump to the bottom line. I used to give an hour lecture to lead up to this, but the bottom line is that the argument over the technological feasibility of a defensive shield is entirely irrelevant, because Star Wars has nothing to do with defense. It is an attempt to deploy offensive weapons disguised as defense.
Okay, can you explain that?
Well,
what do you mean by offensive weapons is I guess what I'm getting at?
Well, in 1982, in his secret defense guidance document, Ronald Reagan ordered the Department of Defense to develop Star Wars weapons, and he assigned them two missions. Now, we know that Reagan didn't write this thing himself. It was probably written by Richard Perle. But in any event, he signed it. And what it said was two missions for Star Wars. One, destroy opposing satellites and seize military control of space. Number two, destroy targets on the surface of the Earth from space without warning. There wasn't a word in there about shooting down ballistic missiles. That was a smokescreen for the American people, because they knew yeah. that the American people would never approve weapons in space for offensive purposes.
And co-opting space as part of a military battlefield is certainly part of the strategy since Reagan, and Bush seems to have picked up on this mantle. Is that what seems to worry China and Russia so much?
Of course, because they know very well that these space weapons have very little defensive utility, but would be extremely useful in an offensive role. The offensive missions are trivial compared to the difficulty of being used in a defensive means. Now, there is a possible use for these weapons against ballistic missiles, but it is in defending against a handful of missiles fired in retaliation by a country where you had wiped yeah. out most of their capability in a first strike.
Sure. And this is the day and age of, you know, sneak terrorism. And when the borders are open, we do know that, you know, there are suitcase yeah. nukes. And I don't know how well a defensive shield would cover us on that. I guess we'll just have to give up.
Totally useless.
Yeah, we just have to give up all our rights to protect us from the suitcase nukes. They've got that yeah. covered, too.
Well, in 2001, in March 2001, I went to Congress, and Dennis Kucinich invited me to address a caucus there, and the subject was Star Wars. And I pleaded with them, don't give the Bush administration a penny for Star Wars weapons until they can prove that they can stop suitcases and all the other means that these things might yeah. get into the country.
I'm really glad we brought this up for you, because that's exactly my analysis as well. And who's a bigger authority on this than Dr. Bob Bowman? Bob, return with us here in a couple of minutes, and we'll outline what you're going to be talking about here in Austin, Texas over the weekend.
And now, back to Deadline Live with your narrator, Jack Blood.
Rock Talking in the free world, Deadline Live, Jack Blood, Dr. Bob Bowman with us, running for United States Congress once again. This time, if we could just do a little bit more, he wins the race in District 15 in Florida. He's running as a Democratic candidate and not, I usually say, a Democrat candidate. But in your case, Bob, you are truly a Democratic candidate and really one of the shining gems, in my opinion, in the Democrat Party. You are truly somebody who can change things and will change things, and I know you're going to be talking about that on your tour, which you're in Houston tonight. Tell people where they can come see you in Houston.
It's at the in the Cougar Den at the University of Houston on the main campus, and I think it's at 8:30. I'm trying to get the details so I can get there.
Well, we've given people at least a tip on University of Houston is the place.
Right, in the Cougar Den.
And let me
point out that this tour has absolutely nothing to do with a possible run for Congress. I have not committed to running again, although we do have an exploratory committee, and I am at the moment planning on it. But anything can happen. But this tour has absolutely nothing to do with any campaign.
You're sending a message to Washington by this tour.
Absolutely. I call this my Patriots Tour. And it is to wake up the American people, to gather ordinary people, working Americans from the right, from the left, and all in between, and get them to demand a government which follows the Constitution, honors the truth, and serves the people. And just that, just those three simple things would make all the difference in the world.
Yes, it would. And you know that Dr. Ron Paul is running for president here out of Texas, nine-term congressman who is, in a sense, a libertarian. Are you going to be supporting his candidacy? I put you on the spot.
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I've invited Ron to be national co-chair of the Patriots. I'm not sure whether he can step into that, whether he would want to, because the immediate goal of the Patriots is to impeach both Cheney and Bush, end the occupation of Iraq, and prevent an attack on Iran.
And we've seen, of course, a lot of news about a pending attack on Iran. Allegedly, they were going to hit it last week. People are still, believe, I guess, that there's going to be an attack this month. Do you think that we're that close, Bob?
I think we're close. I think if they think they can get away with it, they will do it. I think it's quite possible that if they feel they can get away with it, that they'll do another false flag attack, perhaps sacrifice one of our carriers or in the Gulf there. In order to blame it on Iran. You can't put anything past this crowd. But we're trying very hard to convince them that they cannot get away with it, that they haven't really gotten away with their massive cover-up of 9/11, that we're going to expose all that, and they, by God, better not try something else. And or they're really going to be in the fire.
Do you think we've held them off by, perpetually reporting on this and getting this issue out in front of the people, that maybe they might have gone ahead with this last year, the year before, as they had initially intended, but because we have spoken out about it and made such a fuss that they've had to pull back?
I think that's very likely. And that's the one reason why we're continuing to speak out, speak truth to power so loudly. It has to be done because I think that if we make a nuclear attack on Iran, certainly we could destroy that country, but I think it would destroy what's left of ours as well.
Your website is Bowman2006.com, and then you have the new website.
Bowman2006.com
well.
Bowman2006.com is defunct. There is now my new campaign website is Bowman2008.com, but the website for this tour is thepatriots.us.
Thepatriots.us, folks. There you go.
Yeah, the Patriots, plural, Us, and it gives all the information on this tour and the rationale behind it, what we're trying to accomplish, and it'll have a lot of information on it.
You know, we have a few minutes left here with Dr. Bob Bowman, Lieutenant Colonel Bob Bowman, who's on this nationwide tour. Bob, why is it that people like yourself, combat veterans, people who have worked so high up in the machinations of government, somebody such as yourself who can speak about war, who has been involved in war, who's experienced it firsthand, why is it that the media, why is it that the administration refuses to listen to experienced people like yourself?
Because we have the good of the American people at heart. And they're not interested in that. They're interested in their profit. They want to perpetuate the occupation of Iraq. The reason they went in there in the first place was those 14 permanent military bases that will allow them to dominate the entire Middle East militarily and control most of the world oil and gas. That's what they're in this for. It's an imperial fascist plot, and we're determined to prevent it from succeeding. But they won't listen to us because we're not interested in those things. We're not interested in a permanent occupation of Iraq. We're interested in bringing our troops home while they're still alive.
Maybe it is, but shouldn't it be obvious to Americans that any general, anyone with military experience who has disagreed with the Bush administration has promptly been cut out of the media, sent home, fired, unceremoniously replaced? I mean, isn't that ever going to sink into the American people that they have to continually look for these new generals currently? I call him General Petraeus, heading the effort over there. I'm sure he won't last long if, you know, the timetable holds true of how this has gone on. But haven't the American people woken up yet to the fact that they can't find one military general or they can't find anybody to run the show over there that can stay on the same page with the Bush administration for more than 6 or 8 months?
Well, we're trying to wake the American people up to these facts. The truth of the matter is that we combat veterans, we've seen war, we don't like it, and we certainly don't want to send the nation's sons and daughters around the world to kill Arabs for the oil companies. It's only the chicken hawks in the White House and in Congress who are in favor of doing this because they profit enormously from it. The hundreds of billions of dollars spent on this war have not disappeared, after all. They've gone to George Bush's Carlyle Group. They've gone to Condoleezza Rice's ExxonMobil. And, of course, everybody knows they've gone to Dick Cheney's Halliburton. And then from these corporations, through their lobbyists, into the pockets of incumbent congressmen. And I think that's a big part of why there has been no day of reckoning.
Yeah.
But we're going to bring it about.
Final question here, and then we'll look forward to seeing you here over the weekend. We'll be working together once again at this big UT conference. You ran as a Democrat. Give us your assessment of the Democrat-controlled Congress's first 100 days. Are you impressed? What do you think? How have they done so far?
Well, they've done a few little things that were obvious and should have been done a long time ago. But when it comes down to the big things, like most Democratic Congresses, they're lily-livered. They are afraid to go against the big money interests who finance their campaigns and line their pockets.
Yeah. It's fair
and
to say,
because of that,
go ahead.
They have failed to refuse any more money for the occupation of Iraq, and that's what should be done. They should just cut off the money. There's enough money in the pipeline to bring our troops safely home.
It's fair to say you could have given them one more seat in Florida if they would have given you even a modicum of support, your party.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I didn't get a dime from the Democratic Party.
The Patriots.org, is that the website?
No, the Patriots patriots.us.
That's it. The patriots.us and Bowman2008.com. Come out this weekend. See him in Houston tonight at University of Houston. Bob, always great to have you on the show. We look forward to meeting you again this weekend.
Thanks, Jack.
Have a safe trip, and we'll see you over the weekend. Lieutenant Colonel Bob Bowman, folks. That was a great interview. We'll come right back with Chris Emery right after this. Top of the hour propaganda news break. Stay tuned.